The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You're about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the 3 o'clock hour. No, Dom, he'll join soon. You can join right now, 844-967-2789. I got Rich in there lightly screening your phone calls all day long. And don't be afraid to dial liberally, although you get one call per show. You know the rules. If you don't know, now you know. Wanted to start this Stormy Tuesday edition in our backyard. Always like to make it sort of a Wisconsin power hour, if you will. And new from the Wisconsin Supreme Court, there is a call for response to a Planned Parenthood petition. As our friend Jesse Apoyan at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is reporting at this hour, this is pretty new stuff, folks. The state Supreme Court today ordered parties named in the Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin lawsuit to file responses by April 26, signaling the court may consider the organization's petition to recognize a constitutional right to bodily autonomy, including abortion. The organization argues the rights declared by the state's constitution, listen close, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness inherently include the right to determine what one does with one's own body, including whether and when to have a child. All people in Wisconsin share that right equally, the petition argues. Now, Planned Parenthood is also asking the court to recognize a right for physicians to provide abortions, arguing life and liberty also requires the right to pursue one's lawful profession. Yes, you need doctors to perform the procedure so others that would choose not to have the children cannot have the children. And if that's, you know, if you're an OBGYN, you should have the right to practice lawfully here in the state of Wisconsin. So this is a question for the Constitution. They're kind of skipping over the district court, the appellate court, running this one all the way to the top of the flagpole, all the way to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And this, of course, I've pointed this out, and I'm no Kreskin, but this is the issue. Abortion, I don't know if you noticed, but since the overturning of the Roe v. Wade, this is the electoral issue of every election cycle. And you need look only as far as the, spring of 2023 election, about a year ago now, in the victory for Jana Protasiewicz and her impanelment on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And, you know, what did they say? Elections have consequences. Well, that one certainly did. It turned the court from conservative to supposedly liberal. And I guess we'll find out, because now the Planned Parenthood is jumping the line, if you will. The organization filed the petition in February, asking the state's high court to take the case directly, bypassing lower courts, because these are exigent and urgent circumstances that impact the health and well-being of the people we know and care about across the state, said Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin Chief Strategy Officer Michelle Velasquez. Now, the case was filed against District Attorneys Joel Urmansky, Ishmael Ozin, and John Chisholm, who serve in the three Wisconsin counties, Sheboygan, Dane, and Milwaukee, where abortions are provided. Now, the current provision of abortions, that's kind of recent, because let's not forget, after Dobbs kicked in, Wisconsin reverted to 1849, at least for a time being, and a Dane County judge has said, well, that can't be right. That's more of an infanticide, sort of a ruling or law, per se, this 1849 law. So anyways, the Wisconsin Supreme Court perhaps will have to take this up. More from Jesse Poyen's reporting. Planned Parenthood's filing came days after Urbanski filed a petition to bypass an appeals court and asked the state Supreme Court to decide whether a December ruling from a Dane County judge declaring an 1849 law outlawing abortion does not apply to consensual procedures. If the court agrees to take the case, it's likely it will side with the lower court's ruling. The court now has a 4-3 liberal majority, thank goodness, after Justice Janet Protasiewicz ran for a seat on the court with a campaign focused on restoring abortion access in Wisconsin. And Attorney General Josh Call and Governor Tony Evers, both Democrats, filed that lawsuit shortly after the U.S. Supreme Court in June of 22 overturned its 1973 Roe v. Wade decision, which legalized abortion nationwide. Well, Roe did. Dobbs sort of turned that on its ear. The court's 2022 ruling in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Healthcare effectively put back into place the state's original abortion law. That was the 1849 law. You know, you hear Arizona complaining about 1864. We got you beat by 15 years. Now, attorneys for Planned Parenthood argue that either before the court considers the case challenging the 1849 law, or at the same time, it should determine whether an abortion ban violates the rights laid out in the state's constitution of persons who may become pregnant and of the physicians who provide care to them. Even in Call versus Urbanski, could be decided on statutory interpretation, the constitutional issue is likely to recur, the petition argues. So, you know, decide the law is what Planned Parenthood is asking of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. No, Wisconsin Right to Life, they got a different plan. Their legislative director, Gracie Skogman, called the move a radical action from Planned Parenthood that demonstrates their disregard for human life. Well, that's as I thought you might characterize it. The Wisconsin State Constitution protects the lives for all, including preborn children, Skogman said. Now, Chief Justice Annette Ziegler and Justice Rebecca Bad Bradley dissented to the Tuesday order. They didn't want to hear it, right? So they don't even want to hear the arguments. They don't want to decide this law. I'm talking about, you know, the Chief Ziegler and the Bad Bradley, but of course they serve in the court minority, and it's very important. And we talked about last week, Ann Walsh Bradley, we perceive her as the good Bradley. Certainly I do. She's retiring. And I would say that this better be decided before then. Because come spring, do you really want this turnout issue back on the ballot for the other team? You know what I'm saying? Do you want the state Supreme Court to swing on the issue of abortion and whether or not pro-life Wisconsin can turn a seat for Brad Schimmel, the former attorney general, very conservative? I have no doubt what he would rule on this issue. Do you? Does anyone doubt? Even my conservative friends. If Schimmel was on the court and Ann Walsh Bradley was gone, do you think women would have the right to abortions restored here in the state of Wisconsin? I clearly don't. I don't think that would happen. So please consider that. Certainly consider it. April of 2015, about a year from now, when we ask you to vote for someone other than Brad Schimmel to help preserve, let's call it the liberal majority of the court. And that might be Chris Taylor. That might be Judge Susan Crawford. We don't know yet. But it's not going to be Brad Schimmel, not the endorsement coming from this fine program, not from Crudy. That will not be my advocacy. Rights. Rights need to be restored here. And electorally, this is a big GD deal, if you know what I'm saying. It's a big deal. It's a big deal electorally in the state of Wisconsin, and it's going to be a really big deal this fall. I strongly suspect abortion will turn a lot of races. And why do I think this? Because we've seen it. It's played out. It's played out even in the red states. It played out as a constitutional referendum in freaking Kansas. People overwhelmingly wanted the right to abortion in the state of Kansas, which is a pretty Christian conservative, pretty red state. It's going to be on the ballot in Florida. Maybe Florida's in play as a presidential state. Why? Because abortion and a referendum to restore the rights of women in Florida will be on the ballot. Could be on the ballot in Arizona as well for all the wrong reasons. Because when we went to this whole states' rights model, and I can't think that, you know, Donald Trump out there on the stump saying, I brought you this. I put those three judges on the court. He's bragging. And then says, and states' rights, you know, and that harkens back to something else, you know, dark shadows somewhere in my mind. I just remember going to a Donald Trump rally once and, well, where was it? It was down at a Holiday Inn Express. And I forget precisely where it's being held, down on the state line region. And Donald Trump came to the Holiday Inn March 29th, right before the primary in 2016. And some dumbass kid was marching around with a Confederate flag. And he came zooming past the, call it the protest zone outside the Trump rally. And he caught my attention immediately. Maybe it was the flag. Maybe it was the fact that he had an identical Confederate flag tattooed on his shoulder, you know, matching. And I interviewed this young kid and I asked him where he was from. And he said, well, I'm from Milton, Wisconsin. I said, then, you know, effectively, why are you carrying a Confederate flag, you dumbass? And the kid's response, states' rights. And I knew it wasn't the right answer then because, of course, the kid was from Milton, Wisconsin. And I don't know if he knew this, but we were on the northern side. We weren't fighting for the Confederacy or the states' rights to, you know, continue the institution of slavery. And states' rights now is about continuing to take away women's rights, abortive rights. And I think the Wisconsin Supreme Court, I think they need to get on this one. I think they will. I think they'll bring a ruling. I don't know what they're going to rule, but I'm pretty damn sure that women should have the right to abortion in the state of Wisconsin. If that is how our Constitution lays it out, yes, all people should have the right of control over their own body. That's always been our advocacy here. We are the Devil's Advocates. You can always play a part. 844-967-2789.
I think you're the greatest, but my dad says you don't work hard enough on defense. And he says that lots of times you don't even run down court. And that you don't really try, except during the playoffs.
The hell I don't. Listen, kid. I've been hearing that crap ever since I was at UCLA. I'm out there busting my buns every night. Tell your old man to drag Walton and Lanier up and down the court for 48 minutes.
That was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar from the movie Airplane. I love that movie. Very funny stuff. Why do we bring up Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Because he waded into our Wisconsin political fight. Kareem's waded into our politics here in the Badger State. Now, he used to play on the Milwaukee Bucks. Many of you old enough to remember when that was a thing. He was Lou Alcindor then. And that was the, if I recall, the only time the Milwaukee Bucks have ever been gloriously anointed league champions. Until recently, right? Until just 2 years ago. And it's playoff time again. I don't know if you know this, but the Bucks will be playing across the Civic Media Network. I've even got promotions here, folks. I should tell you about this. This Sunday, April 21st, the playoffs begin. The number 3-seeded Milwaukee Bucks will host the Indiana Pacers. And you can listen all across the Civic Media Network. We've got it. Bucks in 6 media markets. You're welcome, folks. I'm not going to go through them because WMDX in Madison is not one of them. But the Bucks, they tip off this Sunday. The playoffs tip off. And, You know, if you're interested, they'll be playing all across the network. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I have seen him in person. I actually saw Kareem in Los Angeles and not at the forum. I saw him at a political rally for Hillary Clinton, of all people. And it was the day of the California primary in Los Angeles in 2016. And it was damn hot that day. And everybody waited for Hillary Clinton. But Kareem was sort of a big shot. And I mean, of stature, he's like 7'2". And also, he's a man to be respected. And this week, the former Buck star Kareem Abdul-Jabbar added to the criticism of Eric Hudvey. You know, the porn stashioed guy running for U.S. Senate against Tammy Baldwin? Well, I don't know if you know this, but he made some asinine statements. We actually shared some of those with you earlier. You are a fair audience. Do you remember that? Eric Hudvey making statements to the effect that nursing home people, those that would preside in nursing homes, they're all going to die. Kind of like a airplane movie. And to hear him tell it, they're all going to die in like 5 to 6 months. It's going to be very rapid. And it's an asinine statement that Hudvey effectively doubled down on when given the opportunity to backtrack. Eric Hudvey, this Republican senatorial candidate, said the same thing twice and used that effectively to say, that's why we should be monitoring the votes at nursing homes. Really, these people are all on death's door. And are they even deserving of a vote? Well, former Buck star Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has now weighed in on the U.S. Senate race in Wisconsin, slamming Republican candidate Eric Hudvey's comments that suggested most nursing home residents are not qualified to vote. In a Tuesday post on his Substack account, the six-time NBA MVP, I get that right, NBA MVP, featured Hudvey's comments and questioned, is this the guy who should be a senator? No, I don't think so. He ran before and the people of Wisconsin didn't think so in 2012, but, you know, he's only sort of gone further a little bit more from, you know, the six-time MVP. What's troubling here is his desire to take away the rights of people who have spent a lifetime contributing to this country based on a physical attribute, age. Even if there was some fraud, the goal should be to uncover it, not deny anyone in nursing homes the vote. Now, Abdul-Jabbar's post adds to the national attention that surrounded Hudvey's comments last week. Yeah, not so bright. In response, campaign spokesperson Zach Bannon said, unfortunately, Abdul-Jabbar has fallen victim to Democrat misinformation. Eric Hudvey in no way suggested that elderly people should not have the right to vote, except when he said it, right? Now, his campaign made a similar statement last week, and Hudvey said he was referring to a specific cases in Racine County where family members raised concerns about their loved ones voting. Is that really it? And when the pandemic started in 2020, poll workers, known as special voting deputies, were barred from entering such facilities, leaving residents with guidance from nursing home workers. And that resulted in a number of allegations, mostly on Dan O'Donnell's show on Right Wing Talk Radio. But anyways, within one Racine County facility of residents with cognitive issues casting ballots, leading to an investigation by the county sheriff. And I would point out, no charges filed. If they coulda, they woulda. There was no there. This is a nothing burger. Hudvey's campaign didn't name any specific policy changes he would believes would address his concerns with election administration. So no solutions offered. Just making it up and rambling, right? Let me tell you what's wrong. Now, Hudvey made the comments in a recent interview on the Guy Benson show. If you're in a nursing home and you only have 5-6 months life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is in a point to vote. And you have children, adult children showing up that said, who voted for my 85 or 90-year-old father or mother? Hudvey said in part. Abdul-Jabbar wrote that if Hudvey was diagnosed with terminal cancer with only a year to live, Should we take away his right to vote because he doesn't have much time invested in the future? Of course not. While not a terminal illness, Hudby was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when he was 27, a chronic illness that he notes on his campaign website. Apparently it benefits him to be chronically ill, he thinks. Now, Abdul-Jabbar also highlighted that Hudby is a former President Trump's pick in the Wisconsin Senate race, in which Hudby is challenging Democrat Senator Tammy Baldwin. That's Crute's pick. Trump endorsed Hudby at his rally in Green Bay earlier this month. Yeah, they're thick as thieves. Abdul-Jabbar frequently comments on politics on his Substack and has often criticized Trump. His professional basketball career started in Milwaukee, yes it did, when he brought the Bucks their first NBA title in his second season. After his six seasons with the Bucks, he was traded to the Lakers and then on to, what, fame? Airplane fame. Is that the only movie series he did, Airplane?
Best I can tell.
He never got a Hertz commercial?
No, he didn't run through any airports.
He was the league's all-time leading scorer until LeBron James broke that record last year. And Abdul-Jabbar was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by Democratic former President Barack Obama. I knew it wasn't going to be Trump, right? Bucks, they start the playoffs this weekend. You can tune in across the Civic Media Network. Bucks in six different media markets. Just, you know, check the listings. I bet locally, if you're listening to me from outside the Madison area, I bet you can find our Civic Media Bucks this Sunday. They tip it off. They haven't announced a game time yet, but we'll share when they do. And I guess we're pre-gaming the Milwaukee Brewers today because that starts about 6:05. Many of the same stations you would listen to those Bucks on across the Civic Media, they got the Brewers as well. You're welcome, people. All you could want for sports coverage. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is anti-Eric Hudby. If Kareem doesn't like him, I don't think you should vote for him. Come back. More Devil's Advocates.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a going home. My baby just wrote me a letter.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. You can send me a text direct. Just use the shiny Civic Media app. You can text right off the screen. It's right there. It's one of the applications. Or you can do it the old-fashioned way, 844-967-2789. My buddy's Dana's listening in God's country up in La Crosse on the stream. He's texting in. I'm wondering if he's just faking it. Eric Hudby? Faking it? I'm not clear if that was the question, Dana. You may have to clarify in the remarks or call in. 844-967-2789. It's a call line. It's a text line. It's our party line. Here's a partying dude, Wisco Paul. How you doing, fella?
I'm doing okay, Crudy. Thanks for taking my call. So, according to Hudby, as soon as you check into a nursing home, you lose your rights to vote because the possibility exists you may vote Democrat or some nurse's aide may help you vote Democrat. Now that's, you know, Crudy, I thought Michaels was bad, you know, because of all the things he said, and he got Trump's endorsement, anti-abortion. But this guy's, if it's possible, I think it is, this guy's worse. Am I correct?
Well, you might be. You might be, Paul. Do you think they just forgive the boss's ignorance in the boardroom down at the banks? You know, because if he's the boss, what are they going to say? If he says lots of dumb stuff, you know, it's forgiven because it's sort of a dictatorship, this capitalist scheme that, you know, we run here as a country. But when you run, you actually have to win over the will of the voters. You can't just tell them what they're going to think. You actually have to convince them to vote for you. And many of the positions this Eric Hudby takes, I mean, you know, he's not down for alcohol, right, Paulie? He doesn't think that you should be able to go to the bar and buy a beer today. He's not down for that. And he's certainly, you know, not down for older people that might be confined to a nursing home. He's not down for them voting. Too close to death, Paulie.
Oh, my God, no spotted call for a Wisco Paul. That would just, you know, hey, the bar isn't very high, is it, Crudy, to run for Senate or governor on the Republican side?
Oh, you just got to have, like,
I don't think
$20 million, Paulie. $20 million to burn on a $174,000 job. You'll pay yourself back in, like, 46 years, buddy.
That's so sad, Crudy. Anyway, thanks for bringing that to my attention. Hugby, no more spotted cow means no Wisco Paul voting for you. Thanks, Crudy.
You're welcome, Wisco Paul. I almost called you spotted cow. Wisco, you know, they don't even serve spotted cow in Laguna Beach, California, where the man lives. He may not be aware there is a spotted cow brand. He might not be able to buy it at his local grocer or liquor store, wherever he gets his. Well, of course, he doesn't like the commercial application of alcohol, so I'm not sure he'd buy spotted cow, even if it was readily available, you know, down at the Laguna Beach, the Orange County where he apparently resides. So anyways, that's Eric Hudby's latest, and even Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had to cast a little shade, if you know what I'm saying. The Wisconsin Supreme Court, been an active day for them and for our reporter Jesse Apoyan over at the Journal Sentinel. They're also, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, asking for responses to a WMC. That's the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. They're the non or virtually non-taxpaying lobby group for the manufacturing sector of the state of Wisconsin, sort of the Chamber of Commerce sorts. Well, anyways, here is the latest from them, reported by Jesse. The state Supreme Court today ordered parties named in a case challenging Wisconsin governor's partial veto powers to file responses by April 30th, signaling the court may consider the challenge filed by the state's largest business lobby. The Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce Litigation Center filed the lawsuit on Monday on behalf of two Wisconsin taxpayers, Jeffrey LeMahieu and David DeValk, as an original action petition, which means attorneys are asking the high court to bypass lower courts and take it up directly. And the WMC lawsuit asks the court, which currently has a liberal majority, did we mention that, thanks to the addition of Protasiewicz, they're asking the liberal majority to strike down one of Governor Tony Evers' partial vetoes from the most recent state budget, and to declare that the state constitution, and here's their statement, forbids the governor from striking individual digits in an enrolled bill to create a new year. It does not authorize the governor to strike language in an enrolled bill to create a larger duration than the one approved by the legislature. So they don't like this action, Tony's 400-year extension. Now, Evers used his partial veto authority in July to ensure school districts' state-imposed limits on how much revenue they're allowed to raise will be increased by $325 per student each year until 2025. That's a long time. He crafted the four-century school aid extension by striking a hyphen and a 20 from a reference to the 2024-25 school year, resulting in the highest single-year increase in revenue limits in the state's history. Well, we'll, what, have 400 equal matching years of revenue increases, nearly identical. WMC Litigation Center Director Nathan Kane says, the law is clear. Voters and their elected legislators are the ones in power to increase taxes, no one else. And no justices dissented to Tuesday's order. Let's not forget, when they're asking Planned Parenthood and others to respond to Planned Parenthood's original jurisdiction suit, this on the question of abortive rights, we've got a couple of conservative dissenters. But when the litigants are supported by the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, well, no dissenters whatsoever. So that tells me the liberals on the court are willing to consider this question of law. And the conservatives, you know, they back and forth with the wind, depending on whether or not it's one of their pet issues. So here is, again, a statement, this one from Governor Tony Evers' spokeswoman, Britt Kutubek. Republicans and their allies will stop at nothing to take away resources from our kids in public schools. Republicans' latest lawsuit aims to strip over $300 for every student at every public school in Wisconsin for the foreseeable future, even as millions of Wisconsinites are being forced to raise their own property taxes to help our schools make ends meet. That's bad for our kids, that's bad for our schools, and it's wrong for Wisconsin. And Wisconsin gives its governor some of the most sweeping executive powers in the country, although partial veto authority has been scaled back over time. We talked about that yesterday, so I'm going to spare you the redundancy, folks. But it's an interesting question, I think. Should Tony have the right, through this very crafty veto, the elimination of a hyphen and a 2-0 from the page, and he turned it from a 2-year piece of legislation into a 400-year piece of legislation? And here's my concern, and I'm not overly concerned, but my concern is that the liberals on the Wisconsin Supreme Court are going to see the reasonableness of perhaps limiting this authority of the governor. 400 years, that's a long time, folks. Do we really think this is quote-unquote fair? Is this what the constitutional founders intended in the state of Wisconsin? You could take some number and turn it into something entirely different. A term of 2 years becomes 400 years. I mean, what are we talking about? Fred Preen's service on the DNR board beyond the end of his term? It's not fair when he sticks around either, is it? I mean, I'm just down for fairness. And I appreciate the governor's efforts to continue to fund the schools for the school kids. I like the kids. I got school kids. But this, to me, seems to need some restraint. Let's just put it that way. We wouldn't like it if it was Scott Walker extending some bad policy for 4 centuries, would we? I mean, just put the shoe on the other foot for a minute. 844-967-2789. Go into the phones. Love it when you participate. Northwoods Terry, you're next. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Remember me, Crudy, talking last week about that Trump guy I met at the casino?
Yep. Didn't like you much.
Okay. No. Well, I told him, can you call me a dumb SOB? Well, no, I'm not going to call you that today. Well, then we got into a discussion about Trump, of course, and how do you bankrupt a casino? Because we're in a casino, him and I, of course.
Yeah.
And while it was them darn union wages that union workers that bankrupt his casinos, that's the response I got.
The reality of that story, Northwoods Terry, is effectively Trump cannibalized his own casino. He had one successful casino, and it was a question because he had some organized crime ties into. Get a casino operator's license, you're supposed to be beyond reproach, not have those sort of ties. But Trump had them.
Yeah.
And then he had one successful casino, and then, he only had one good idea, so he built a second and a third on the same strip. When you put 3 casinos side by side, effectively, and they're all competing for the same dollars, there's not an infinite number of dollars. It's a zero-sum game, Terry. So, there's only so many degenerate gamblers on the strip. And he got enough money, but he didn't. And he went bankrupt. And all 3 of his casinos went bankrupt.
Hopefully I can reach this guy when I see him next week with that, which you just told me. 3 casinos back to back to back, right, alongside one another.
Well, effectively, he cannibalized his own casinos. His old man tried to prop him up in that same book, Trump Revealed, which I've read now some 7-8 years ago. So some of these memories fade. But Terry, his old man walked in with like $6 million in cash, bought casino chips, and never cashed them out. Effectively, money laundered, tried to give direct aid to his son. That would be way beyond what would be an acceptable gift, right? It would create a taxable circumstance, both to the giver and the receiver, unless you go and buy casino chips and you have no intent to ever redeem the casino chips. So you spent money. Mm-hmm. He basically gave his son an interest-free $6 million loan, and it still wasn't enough to prop up his failed enterprises. I mean, look up the Trump bankruptcies. Terry, there's at least 6 on the book so far. My math.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And where, how come these people can't see this? I just is amazed. I can't explain it.
Well, they're this, Terry, they're the same people investing in the Trumpy social. Do you know that thing's lost like 60% of its value in the first month? And quite frankly, yeah. It's small, deluded investors that think this guy somehow has their best interest in mind. They're going to vote for him, but it would be crazy, wouldn't it, Terry, that the Truthy Social, the DJT stock, could you see a circumstance where he screwed so many of his supporters because this stock is just going to leave them bankrupt? Anyone that bet the farm is going to be bankrupt on DJT stock. And anyone mm-hmm. that gets screwed by this guy financially, I can't imagine there's a lot of Trump University grads that are still voting for Donald yeah. Trump. And people that consume the Trump vodka or the Trump steaks or ever work for the Trump Airlines and all these other bankrupted, the Trump Taj Mahal in Atlantic City, all these former employees that, you know, got screwed by the guy, probably got stiffed on any sort of severance they were entitled to. And of course, they've seen up close and personal. This guy, the only thing he successfully ever did was act like a businessman on the Celebrity Apprentice. That's the most successful thing he ever did. That, and he was born under a bright, shining star in Fred Trump.
Don't forget, Crudy, that he also screwed up the USFL.
He bankrupted the USFL. Terry, he destroyed the league. The guy bankrupted a football league.
Yeah, trying to go head-to-head with the NFL in the fall when he could play spring football with a TV contract. They could have kept doing what they were doing, playing spring football.
Well, it ended up in bankruptcy, like many of the Trump endeavors. Come back with us. You're never bankrupt when you're listening to the Devil's Advocates. Doesn't cost you a thing. Always fill you with good investment advice. Don't buy the DJT. Do not buy the DJT. Unless you're CJ. Then I say, go nuts! Blue Horseshoe loves DJT. But only for you, CJ. Come back. More of your calls. 844-96-PARTY.
Kicking ass and taking names since the Wisconsin uprising. The Devil's Advocates.
JoJo was a man who thought he was a loner, but he knew it couldn't last.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Stormy Tuesday edition. Dom joining soon. You can join right now, 844-967-2789. Matt, be patient just a minute. You're next. I just want to throw a little information out about Trump bankrupting his Atlantic City casinos. The headline at Yahoo Finance, Donald Trump owned several Atlantic City casinos that went bankrupt. Despite this, he said, Atlantic City fueled a lot of growth for me. That's what he claimed. In the glittering world of Atlantic City's casinos during the 1980s, Donald Trump emerged as a major player. His entry into the casino industry was timed with the booming popularity of Atlantic City as a gambling haven, second only to Las Vegas. And Trump's ambition led him to acquire three of the city's major casinos, marking him as a significant presence in a thriving industry. Then, the landscape of casino gambling shifted dramatically. The legalization of gambling in other states gradually eroded the monopoly Atlantic City once enjoyed. The decentralization of gambling industry started to draw crowds away, impacting the city and Trump's casino revenues. So he picked a industry and didn't see the writing on the walls, folks. And Trump's challenges in the casino industry were not just external. The internal financial structure of his ventures, particularly the Trump Taj Mahal, was fraught with risks, heavy reliance on debt. These establishments faced immense pressure to generate substantial revenue. Financial analysts like Mark Hofberg of the Wall Street Journal predicted early on that the seasonal fluctuations in tourism would severely impact these casinos' ability to cover operational costs and debt payments. Trump's response to these challenges was very varied and controversial. He initially dismissed critics and analysts who foresaw the impending financial troubles as the predictions materialized. Trump's strategy included blaming external factors and individuals including contractors and business associates, for their failures. All those coffee boys on the payroll, they get very expensive. And by the early 1990s, the financial situation of Trump's casino empire had become critical. Multiple bankruptcy filings ensued: the Trump Taj Mahal in 1991, followed by Trump Plaza and Trump Castle in 1992, and later Trump Hotels and Casino Resorts Incorporated in 2004. Now, that's a whole decade later. These filings were a clear indication of the dire state of his casino ventures. But despite these setbacks, Trump's finances remained somewhat insulated from the turmoil of his business ventures. He managed to negotiate deals with creditors that allowed him to avoid personal bankruptcy and maintain a semblance of financial stability. It was only a semblance. 844-967-2789. Matt, appreciate your patience. Welcome, man. How's the weather in Johnson's Creek?
Well, it's windy everywhere. I'm kind of on the road right now.
We got tornadoes already starting to hit in Iowa, man, so we're going to have to watch the weather.
Yeah, I believe it. So just, I want to go back to Tony Evers and his, I think, brilliant comma deletion, or hyphen deletion, if you will.
Yes, the 400-year veto.
Yeah. It reminds me of when they change a rule in football, and then one coach figures it out before all the other coaches. So they say we want that rule gone, not because they really disagree with it, but because they didn't think of it first. This smacks of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and the conservatives and whoever else not having, like, he just got one over on them.
Well, Matt, I can appreciate that, but this is not the forward pass. This is a 2-year bill that was extended 398 years beyond its intended purpose. You could yeah, see why the other side might not feel like this is entirely fair.
Yes, I agree. I just don't want to do the old rules for thee, but not for me. And actually the opposite of that, where we play on a field that they're not playing on. And when we actually do secure a win, we give it back by letting them basically take it back. Right. Mitch McConnell never felt a twinge of guilt when he would not seat Justice Alito the Supreme Court. Right. Like, Republicans do this stuff a lot.
Oh, I don't think Tony Evers should feel a twinge of guilt here, Matt. But my point would be, is if they are fair jurists, and I believe this quote-unquote liberal block of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, I believe they are fair jurists. And I think they're going to have a hard time believing the intent of the founders when they extended this grandiose veto power to the governor, knew that he could use it to extend bills 400 years into the future. Matt, they're going to be fair, and you know the righties aren't liking this worth a damn, right? There were no dissenters on the right. Everyone wants this bill. A crack at this veto. And, you know, I think ultimately this will probably result in a very fair-minded bipartisan ruling from the court. Because when the liberals are faced with fairness, they're probably going to rule on the side of, you know, the law and fairness. That's my opinion, Matt.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I just don't be surprised when it doesn't buy us an ounce of credit for this. This is not what they meant argument from hundreds of years ago when the abortion ban comes up before them and the conservatives are saying, well, it's what they wrote, so that's what they wanted.
But, Matt, let's also consider the fact this very abortion ban, the Dobbs, I'm not saying that Janet Protasiewicz wouldn't have won election, but she wouldn't win election by 11 points, dude. And I think this issue,
I
mean, we might look at the 8th CD, the congressional seat Mike Gallagher is retiring from. We might see Dr. Kristen Lierley projected into that seat, an OBGYN, in a plus 16 red district. But that issue has such power. I think if anyone is going to win that race, it's going to be her. And I think this issue still has salience, man. It's got teeth. And, you know, quite frankly, it helps set the stage of this court. And I think it will help preserve the makeup of this court when Ann Walsh Bradley retires next April, I guess.
Yeah, have a good day.
Thank you. Technically, I guess it would be July 31st, the election in April, the impanelment of a new Supreme Court justice, because it's not going to be the good Bradley, it's not going to be Ann Walsh Bradley, will be August 1st. And that's either going to be another quote-unquote liberal, or that's going to be a flipping back of the court to the conservative side. And if it's Brad Schimmel on the court, women will not have abortion rights. But, you know, when it comes to something like, can Tony Evers extend a 400-year veto? No, probably not. Fair is only fair for our team. You know what I mean? I still could not see being so twisted that every partisan issue should be decided for whatever the blue team thinks. That's not the way life is supposed to be. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. That is the way life is supposed to be. 3 hours each day.